Ohio seniors make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only dog fundraising podcast through good measures. I don't really know. I'm Joel Gasson with John Fraser as usual. Plenty to get to as all these games early in weeks are really throwing me off, because once again, it feels like ages ago since the Saskatchewan Roughriders played a game and we're recording this podcast.
Well, certainly. I had to go back and read Good, Bad, and Dumb again while we were discussing what we were going to talk about on this podcast.
It's been so long since they've played that the Riders actually get to practice four times this week. They basically got a bye week in between here in Labor Day. They played Thursday night in Toronto, lost in very ugly fashion. It was not a blowout. It was a very close game. A game they could have won nonetheless, but did not deserve to win, because it was even it was a performance from the offense that I would say would even make previous editions of this team blush.
Those are some harsh words, Cass.
So, I mean, I don't think I'm wrong, but so we will get into that and a bunch more. So we'll of course talk about the game against the Argos. We'll talk about the Rouge, because it's been a hot conversation, and we will look a little bit ahead to this week's game, which is of course the annual Labor Day Classic.
Yes. But so you can expect a angry Fraser rant next week's episode.
Maybe. But at what point does it just sort of like settle in that you stop being angry about it and it's just you becomes apathy, right? Because every fan reaches that point, do they not?
I mean, in fairness, with the Labor Day Classic, that's
the Bombers could be undefeated right now and the Riders winless and you'd still be expecting to lose this game.
Oh, 100%. My apathy. See, now what it comes down to is how they lose. Like last year when we lost and Zach was bad, I'm like, hey, I'm frustrated because Drew Brown is clearly the better quarterback, right? And we couldn't stop Jake the Legend Dolagala. So I'm generally apathetic to a Labor Day loss, but you still want to see your club win, especially now that it is a battle for first place in the West.
And in exactly the way everyone drew it up, too.
Oh, totally, totally. Two teams at or below 500 coming into Mosaic Stadium on Labor Day Sunday with first place in the West on the line by only a single point.
Yeah. I mean, hey, we'll probably get into it a little later, but I actually asked the question to Dan Plaster this week.
Yeah.
And I may have to actually ask Rob Banstone this question to get the actual answer. Is when was the last time the Labor Day Classic has featured both of these teams kind of being mid?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Usually it's, we've seen in renditions where both teams are good. One team's good, one team's shit. Both teams are good, both teams are shit. When have we kind of seen where they both kind of been in the middle of the road? It hasn't really been in my time covering this team.
I don't even think it's been in my because we were... The Bombers were really good in the early 2000s and then really bad in the mid-2000s, so the Riders picked it up. And then, same thing. We were really good. The Riders were bad. Yeah, this is the first time that... Yeah, I'm digging into the Bombers... Oh, yeah, that we've got... Okay, I've got, the team records. I'm trying to Google up quick team records. Because we fairly... You and I know Winnipeg... Or Saskatchewan's records basically off the top of our head. I'm trying to think the last time... Here we go. Yeah, because the Riders are bad for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm. They've kind of swapped back and forth being bad, or they're both kind of good.
Yeah.
Or they're both bad, which happens sometimes.
Which would have been like the late 90s. Both teams weren't very good. The early 90s, the Bombers were good. Maybe the late 80s?
Yeah.
Anyways, you start talking about the Open here, and I'm going to look up the Riders' records, because now I'm genuinely fascinated.
So, with, of course, Labor Day weekend in mind, you may remember last year and this year as TransCanada Brewing in Winnipeg.
Great
made
beers.
The Saskatchewan
Great
Dozen beers. With the 13 Pilsners. They're doing it again this year. But I haven't actually tried the beer. You said it was good. The case itself is fantastic enough. Comes with the penalty flag, the whole thing. It's great. Something is going around Regina right now. And it, no, not in illness or anything. But that I think is pretty great as well. And it's something worth talking about, worth giving a little bit of plug to. I said this to you earlier today.
Yes.
I saw something about it briefly on the weekend. Like, I thought I saw something like the sign on someone's lawn. And I was like, well, that's weird. Why would that person have that on their lawn?
Right.
And then I like saw the post actually from Bright Eyes Dog Rescue here in Regina the other day, where they have started to what they've called bomb people's yards with a sign that says home of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers biggest fan.
I love it.
So it's like blue. It's got the gold stripe in the middle and the W and the whole thing, just so you know, because podcasting is a visual medium. And
especially when the two of us don't want to go on camera yet. Yeah. We feel like, I know that day's coming one day, but until then,
at some point I feel like we might be forced into it, but for now, we're just
for now, we can
this.
Hide behind the cloak of darkness.
So yes, the Bright Eyes Dog Rescue posted this now on their Instagram and probably other socials as well. They plopped one on Dan Clark's lawn,
which is
just funny. So basically for a $20 donation, get in contact with the rescue if you want to be the person sending signs out. $20 donated, they will put that sign on someone's lawn for up to 24 hours, or until the other people pay a $20 donation as well. But if you can't or don't want to make the donation, that's also fine. You just have to wait out the 24 hours. If you want that off your lawn right away, then yeah, you can pay the $20 and it'll be gone.
I love this idea for multiple reasons. You and I are both dog lovers. So anything to fundraise for a dog rescue, adopt, don't shop is what you should be doing. I hate to sound too preachy there, but them's the realities. Two, I love cheeky fun. And I've said it before on this platform and many platforms that the Bomber Rider rivalry is so much fun because nobody's a dickhead about it. I get it. We have small pockets of dickheads on both sides.
Bad stuff happens everywhere all the time with anyone.
Exactly. But like, I can walk into Mosaic in my Bomber gear, as I so often have done, and have some fun shit talk during the game, and you leave, you have a beer, you high five, right? So this is kind of in that vein, which I love. And I just think it's a fun, unique fundraising idea, right? Mm-hmm. Like, $20, you could pick anybody's lawn, give them the address. You can either get that thing off your lawn for $20, like, or I love the idea, and it's one of those great ideas that are so good that I'm like, I almost wish I would have thought of that and given that to a charity. But hopefully this goes really well for them. Getting Dan Clark nice and early in the week, and the nice thing is too is you've basically got a 2-week blitz here, right? I mean, playing at home on Labor Day Sunday, then the Banjo Bowl. So it's a cool idea. I love seeing cool ideas, and I love seeing dog rescues make money. So, 100%. I hope every one of our 7 listeners gets bombed this week.
I was going to ask, have you set one up to be sent to Greg yet? Or
I don't have his address, and I don't have a slick way of getting it. I've got it. I've got, like, although I wonder.
Joe would have it, because he sends out Christmas cards, does he not?
This is happening. Okay, Joe is getting texted right now. Well, maybe not right now. We'll do it after the program, and we can bomb a friend of the show, one of the hosts of the Piffles podcast, Greg McCullough.
Yes, because out of everyone that I'm kind of close with, he's the only one that I would actually say is actually like a Rider fan. So, like doing it to me wouldn't be worth it because I mean, but whatever.
Yeah,
I'd pay the money just to make the donation, but
right.
And then you're in Saskatoon, so I don't think they do up there, but it's also kind of true. So
100% at least, you know, in like a several block radius.
If I could get a separate sign that said biggest fan of Zach Caleros, that one would end up on your lawn.
I would give all of my money to get that off my lawn. It would just be like, no, okay, what's your e-transfer? How much to not put that shit on my lawn right now? Just name the number. Blank check here. Got to remortgage the house. Boom, done.
So if any charities are listening in Saskatoon, or you know any charities in Saskatoon and you're listening, if you want to get a lot of money quickly, make a Zach Caleros' great sign and put it on John's lawn. There you go.
And let's just end, if you want, you can also put, like our friend Greg has done in the famous Photoshop I've tweeted out a few times, you can also maybe put some bottles of the brewery, the distillery that should not be named, beside it, because that... Yeah. I will drink generic commercial beer, but I will not drink that ish.
No. Yeah, Rider fans once again probably getting into some beverages after last week's game against the Toronto Argonauts. Probably their most offensive performance yet, and yes, not in a good way, obviously, as the offense really just was completely ineffective in a way that we have not seen in a little bit of while here in Saskatchewan.
A little bit of Tino Cinceri era vibes.
Yeah, so we will get into that and more. But as always, John, for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company, what is in the glass this week?
Well, I normally go to Sobeys Liquor on my way home from work, but I had to go I was out and about, went to the co-op liquor store. And I hope I don't get anybody fired by doing this, but I walked in and I was like, I need a 4-pack for the weekend. I'm doing some work outside. And they had accidentally priced the double white IPA from Pile of Bones as the single white IPA from Pile of Bones. So I took advantage of this faux pas. It was like the IKEA commercial. Start the car! Start the car! Left with those. But then the sadder part of the story is I drank them all, so now I'm having shitty commercial beer because that's all that's left in my fridge right now. Because it was...
This is a real trend lately.
It's the summer. You get outside. Like yesterday, I spontaneously decided to clean my kid's pool because it looked like a science experiment.
It only makes them stronger. It's fine.
Yeah. No, it was bad. I couldn't tell if it was from the bleach I was working with most of the day or from the actual ick in the pool, but I had like itchy ankles and needed to have an extra shower last night. So, beers were consumed. Had to make sure my immune system was ready to kill whatever attacked it.
Fair enough. For me, picked up from 9 Mile Legacy Brewing. Friends up there in Saskatoon, that is their Longview Pilsner.
Oh, so good.
One of my absolute favorite beers that tastes like beer. So if that's your thing, I would highly recommend, especially because it's currently $5 off until Thursday morning at Sobeys Liquor this week. So
fantastic. And that's not even a plug because you're still on paternal leave. To answer the mid question.
Yep.
As I have been multitasking, the closest I can find is in 1977. The Bombers were, I was only -9. Back when I was, 'twas nothing but a sparkle in Gerald Fraser's eye. In 1977, the Riders were 8-8, and the Blue Bombers were 10-6. And I kid you not,
that's real.
Everything after that, both teams have been bad, or one team has been very good.
Yeah.
It's like freakishly remarkable how not a single season, like, even comes close. Like, yeah, it is. Like, my mind is now a little blown right now. Like,
I figured it'd been a while. I didn't think it would actually before either of us were born.
Like, yeah.
That is pretty wild.
That is the closest we get. Because every other, like, I'm looking for basically by good, obviously well above 500. By mid, I'm looking for close to 500. And I don't have the breakdown of what that season was. Maybe our former playing partner, Glenn, can help us out with that. One of our 7 listeners. Looks like that was the last time that both teams were mid. As the kids would say,
it was not a mid performance for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders last Thursday, as they went to Toronto and faced Chad Kelly the Toronto Argonauts. And it looked like it was going to be a pretty good game. They rushed out to a 13-0 lead in their first 4 drives, and you thought, okay, this is kind of what they didn't do against Montreal. They're taking advantage of it. The offense looks pretty smooth.
Yep.
The defense is obviously in its bag right now. Things are going great. And then they did literally nothing the rest of the game. And, like, it was such a harsh turnaround that I can't ever remember being like, okay, like, there's been games where teams, and this is, you know, true across football, where they do, you know, you have the really great opening drive because you've been working on it all week and that goes well, and then you kind of suck the rest of the game. Like, that's not uncommon. But to have 4 good drives and then completely fall off the map as hard as the Riders did for the rest of the game doesn't happen all that often. And it wasn't the entire team. Like, it was basically just the offense because the defense did their job. Like, Toronto found the end zone once, and that includes four attempts at the goal line. three of them, the Argos failed to score.
Which is unbelievable.
Which is an absurd ratio in any level of football, league, anywhere. I don't care 1 yard off the ball or not.
Yeah.
Special teams were great. Adam Korsak had probably his best punting game as a Saskatchewan Roughrider, and he's had some good ones. But he was absolutely money in that game, keeping Janarian and Grant at bay for the most part. One kind of got away from him a bit, but they still stopped him. He had a 64-yard boomer. Like, it was a masterpiece on that end as well. Brett Lowther rebounded, hit all four of his field goals. And it was just a completely abysmal offensive performance that I think is downright shocking, considering even when Shea Patterson was playing, the offense did not look that bad.
No, the offense was awful. Now, I will defend them just a little bit. I thought they were bad. They were disjointed. Clearly something was amiss. But again, the only downside of, the only downside of stopping Toronto at your goal line three times, that means you're starting from your 1 yard line three times. And it just seemed like that seemed to rattle the offense, right? You know, you see one of two things kind of happen in that situation. Either the offense comes out all full of piss and vinegar because the defense just made this massive, game-changing play and they put together a drive, but it seemed like they would come out and just poop their pants. So it was disjointed, it was ugly, but it was almost like that feeling carried over. It was almost like Trevor Harris felt like he was in his own end zone and had to make decisions too quickly, even when they weren't, right? It was like that feeling of back-to-back drive, starting on this 1 yard line, spooked him, and he was just like that the rest of the game.
That didn't help him, but it was also, it was the drive where it was after a punt.
Yeah.
And they were at their 14 when he threw that interception.
Oh, that was terrible.
And that's what turned the game. Like, they were up 13-0, it was second down. There was no need to try to push the ball down the field there. As aggressive as I like to be, like, sure, throw it. But that was not the choice to make. And from that point on, everything just completely derailed for them, because including that drive. So after they made it, so like their first four drives were 58 yards, 69 yards, 0 yards, and 35 yards. After that, every drive the rest of the game, 1 yard. This is net yards, by the way. 1 yard, 8 yards, 0 yards, 18 yards, 1 yard, 20 yards. That's when they got a field goal in the second half. And I think that's one of the ones where they actually threw the ball downfield a little bit.
Yeah.
8 yards, 10 yards, 10 yards, 41 yards. That was the other field goal. 2 yards, and then the infamous final drive of the game of -7 yards. So based on math, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Like, they didn't have many first downs after that.
no, or any net yardage at all. That's like, it kind of sounds like
it was 112 yards net, I believe. I said in the piece after those four drives.
Wow.
So they basically were able to go down the length of the field once after that.
it kind of looked like me trying to play NCAA football on Heisman difficulty. It was ugly. It was not good, but you could tell the tone shift. And I was surprised, because this seemed like something this team had moved away from. Mm-hmm. Was when bad things happened to them, they kind of were able to still keep their poop in a group. But this, it was like that Trevor Harris interception, like the whole way that, right, the way he played right before the half. Mm-hmm. Almost like just completely deflated them, right? Like, you're up, you're playing awesome, you're 6:28 away from halftime, and you throw two picks in 6 minutes, right?
Essentially, and the same play too.
Yeah, exactly. Like the same out pattern that I don't think anybody that plays NCAA football 25 is throwing. To see it happen twice. You could tell it was deflating, which we haven't seen out of this team a lot this year. We did see it in years prior, so that surprised me a bit. But with both those coming so close to halftime, like, you can't be making those mistakes at half. Like, you go from, heading into the room with a lead to now all of a sudden it's tied and you feel like you've been punched in the mouth and you bleed your own blood. And it's just, it's not a good feeling, right? You're right, so many positives, right? And I think the score flattered this team.
Oh, hell, heck yes. The defense was good, but situationally, because yeah, they had the three stops at the goal line, but the Argos still got to the goal line a lot.
Right.
And,
exactly.
And that's not like I'm not blaming the defense for anything. Like, they played well, even had the Argos scored more touchdowns. But yeah, like, the Argos should have beat the brakes off them.
Oh, 100%.
Like, that was easily a 2-3 score win for them.
Yeah. It kind of like how if Saskatchewan plays anybody but Montreal the week prior, they beat the brakes off of anybody else. Toronto kind of did the same thing, right? Like, you know, I get it. It's great defense to stop a team on the goal line, but it also requires, like, it's not something that happens all the time, right? And Toronto.
Yeah. I think by the third one, there must have been a hope in Corey Mace's mind that for some reason Ryan Dinwiddie did the cowardly thing and kicked a field goal because he got scared from being stopped so many times just to get the ball back to the 40-yard line.
Yeah, and again, kudos to Dinwiddie.
Yeah, he stuck with it, to his credit. A lot of coaches, after even one or two stops, might have just said, no, we're kicking now.
Yeah, it's not our night. We're able to drive, you know, 109 yards, but can't go the rest of the way. So I'll give Dinwiddie credit for that. And if they even punch in or even kick a couple field goals, we're not having this conversation about the Rouge. It seems like this is, and I get it, people are mad, but I feel like people are mad at the wrong thing this week in Saskatchewan. Everybody's talking about the Rouge when we should be talking about some of the questionable coaching decisions on this one, especially late in the game. And we love Corey Mace. We are Corey Mace guys, but that clock management at the end of the game, Joel, was just atrocious.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, there's no question about it. Yeah.
Like just run the ball. And the stupid thing is, like, he showed his timeout. He essentially iced Trevor Harris, right? On the timeout late in the game, Trevor Harris in his own end zone. They've got the right play called. They see the blitz coming. They've got the right play called. Everybody and their dog thinks the Riders are going to run two times and go to overtime there. So your chance to catch them by surprise was gone when you called that timeout too late.
Yeah.
And then to go back to the pass, as you could see, Toronto went, oh, okay, well, they might pass, so we're going to drop into a bit softer coverage. We're not bringing the house. Forcing Trevor Harris to throw in a triple coverage is like, well, now you can't run the clock out. So instead of kicking to Jadarian Grant with...
But Glenn Suter said they could.
I thought, okay, my impression of that, and this is the most absurd part of this whole thing, that Glenn Suter was so bad on that last drive that we could have multiple interpretations of just how bad he was.
Yeah.
Lots of people think, and I'm with you, that he didn't understand that, you know, the clock stops after an incompletion. I thought he wanted Korzak to run around in the end zone despite the fact the ball was snapped from the 1 yard line.
I don't think that. I can't imagine a world where he could run around for like 20 seconds and punt.
Oh, God, no.
If they were up five, you could do that and take the safety, sure.
Exactly. Take the safety, give up the single. You still can't tie with a win with a field goal.
The double, the safety, but yeah, 2 points.
Yes. Sorry. But yeah, give up the safety. Kick it off deep, and then, okay, you're tying the game with a field goal. So that would have made sense. I don't know what Glenn Suter was thinking there.
No. And, I mean, we don't really know what Corey Mace and Mark Mueller were thinking there. Sure. Either. Like, it's a very obvious scenario. We get it. We are aggressive guys. Like, maybe you take the shot on first down.
Yeah.
You know, there was technically time to get down the field and maybe get the Rouge yourself for the win or something. So, like, I understand that thinking and can appreciate that thinking. But at the same time, you haven't moved the ball all damn since, you know, the fourth drive of the game. Maybe let's just get through this, get to overtime, and at least then we'll start at the plus 35, you know?
And that's it. And you've got a short field in overtime, and it's not like Frankie Hickson was bad either. He had 79 yards on the night. He was averaging 5 yards a touch.
The real big mistake in that whole, like, obviously the running on second down was bad, but it was the sack on first down that was worse.
Yeah.
I mean, had that just been an incomplete pass or they just hand off and run, you know, the whole situation is obviously avoided. Even if Harris takes, like, a short sack, it's fine.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But instead, you back yourself way up and you're trying to make the last place of the game for the shadow of your goalpost where there is no room for error. Like, you can't go down in the end zone. Like kudos to Harris for staying out of said end zone. But, like, man, it was an ugly performance by the offense. It was an ugly performance by the coaching staff. And yet, still somehow they're first place in the West Division. Like, I feel like it's funny with watching this team and watching the things that Corey Mace does, and how so much of early in this season that Corey Mace has the team playing well, playing for each other, you know, looking out for one another, but seems to still make a few boneheaded mistakes. It's like, well, what's this team going to do when Corey Mace sits down and plays a season of Madden? Which, for the record, if I am ever a general manager one day or owner, both are totally feasible things for happen to me in my lifetime. If either one of those things were to happen, mandatory training for my head coach would be, all right, you're sitting down, you're running a season of Madden, and I'm watching your clock management. Because I feel like our generation, and I'm surprised that Corey Mace is around our age, but, you know, he was playing professional football while we were playing Madden. I just feel like we all know clock management because we've all played Madden our whole lives.
Maybe. I don't know. It was, you know, weird things happen in moments, I suppose. We're not on the sidelines. We're not in the booth. You get caught in weird worlds, I guess, sometimes. And, you know, this is not to say that we're discouraged by Corey Mace or Mark Mueller at this point. I think they both are still great. They have great potential. This is just clearly a learning moment for them and a self-scouting moment for them. And it'll be important to see whether they learn from this going forward because, you know, to his credit, I think he sort of saw what he did the week before against Montreal with not taking those top opportunities in third and one. And
yes,
he went for every single third and one this time.
Yes.
So no, I think Corey Mace is a guy who learns from his mistakes. And I expect, unless execution is off, for them not to make a similar mistake again.
No, absolutely. I would 100% agree with you. But it's just funny, though, like you can tell how well liked that Mace is here in the province, Mace and Mueller, mm-hmm. because all the discourse on social media was about the Rouge.
Yeah. Well, and in fairness, part of that is because it got carried out throughout the country. It wasn't just Rider fans talking about it. There was a lot of discourse both ways about this. You know, it catches attention south of the border, some of it positive, some of it negative. It gets all over the place for whenever a game is decided on a Rouge on a missed field goal. And right. It always kind of fires up the discussion a little bit about should there, you know, when and where should the Rouge be applied. There are people out there who believe the Rouge should not exist at all. They are wrong.
I will fight you to the death, those people.
Yeah, the Rouge should... But there is an argument to be made, I think. And we're not just saying this because the Riders lost. The Riders, as we said, fully deserve to lose that game. They should have lost like 42-10. So
yes.
Just it's inconsequential to what happened in that game. Had it gone the other way around and the Riders won on that Rouge, I'd still feel the same.
I would agree.
It's not necessarily a hill I'm willing to die on. It's like I'm not banging the table saying this is a change that absolutely needs to be made. Because I think, you know, whenever a game is decided on a missed field goal, Rouge in the dying set, and like literally the last seconds of the game, does not happen all that often.
No.
So I don't think it's necessarily like a panic this has to be like addressed with immediately once the season's over. But it is a conversation that is still worth talking about in terms of should there be a Rouge applied when the ball just sails completely out of the end zone. And I would argue that no. Like, I think like a safety, like a Rouge in basically every other scenario, unless you can like hammer a kickoff right through the end zone, which, okay, at that point you've earned a point because you kicked a ball like 100 yards.
Agreed.
At that point, sure. But otherwise, basically every other, you know, way the Rouge is scored involves the ball landing in the ground, or at least somewhere.
No, absolutely. And I don't think there's any, it's funny that like you watch the people, especially south of the border, that are talking about the Rouge and their lack of knowledge on it. Right. Mm-hmm. Everybody sees, oh, they get a point for a missed field goal. Huh? You get a point for failing participation trophy and all that bullshit. But you're right. Every other way it's scored is actually encouraging offense or creativity or, you know, good play on special teams. You're literally being punished for not running the ball out of the end zone on a kickoff, a punt, a missed field goal, whatever. So I'm like you. I don't like it on the exact situation that happened in Toronto where Haralahu kicks it through the end zone but misses. I don't like it there. Kickoff.
He didn't even really care if he made the field goal. It's clear he was just kicking that as hard as he could.
Oh, 100%.
Fair game. That's the rules as they state right now. So that's 100% what he should do. Just don't hit the upright. And he almost did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was in this weird spot where it's like, you either put it through or, you know, put it through the goalposts and almost went doink, which would have been the ultimate disaster. So I want it to stay. I've been saying this for years and years and years. Every time this comes up, let it stay. But I would be very much okay with, in that exact situation, you kick it. Even if you wanted to make it something like there's no rouge in the fourth quarter or something.
Yeah, there are people who have said after the 3-minute warning, you can't win the game on a rouge, basically.
Basically.
Like, if the ball sails out, the rouge doesn't count on that spot in the final 3 minutes.
But I would see I would love to that only apply to like kicks, because I would absolutely love, and I'm stealing this from you from the preamble, to see somebody try to coffin corner a punt zone.
Yeah, like I would always argue if the ball lands in the end zone, even on a field goal, if it's missed, if it lands in the end zone, there is an opportunity for it to be conceded one way or the other. Then the ruse should apply. Yes.
No, I absolutely, because I think that is a sneaky, super exciting play.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're on your 40, rather than attempting a 47-yard field goal, if you trust Adam Korsak to go out there and just hit a line drive to the coffin corner of the end zone, why not?
Well, absolutely. And let's face it, our boy Sergio Castillo won the Winnipeg Blue Bombers a Grey Cup on the strength of the Rouge, so I cannot argue for it to go away. Or I'd be a hypocrite.
No, and I mean, like, overall, the Rouge is a good thing. It is very much a strategic thing. There is, you know, scenarios where you give it up to gain yardage. And on punting scenarios, for example, like, the Rouge is essentially a punt. Like, okay, you score a point, but you're also giving up 35 yards.
Exactly.
So that's why most of the time you don't do that. But occasionally it rolls in and you get punished for it. Or there are scenarios as well where it's like, okay, we're too far away for a field goal, but we're up 8 right now. So let's just hammer this into the end zone with a minute left and make it a 2-possession game.
Which is why John Ryan would have been much better in that spot, but instead he just rouged everything.
Yeah, he did.
Which is funny. You would think, as a couple of guys that love the Rouge, we would have loved that. But as I said back then, that was no bueno.
There's a time and a place, and there's a strategy to it that I love. And that's why I don't necessarily like the missed field goal game-winning Rouge, because there's no real strategy to it. It's just, kick it as hard as you can, kick it through BMO Field, and we'll just all get out of here.
Exactly. Especially BMO Field with the shortened end zones at the two ends, too. Is that still a thing? Still like 117 or something, or 118 the one way?
I honestly don't know.
I'd have to...
I know the grass in one of the end zones is still different, but...
That's fair.
They showed the shot of it in the game. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, it was jarringly different. I've already hit my Google capacity for this episode, so otherwise I would fire that up and take a look, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure about it. And he hit it so hard it didn't matter. Like, if it was fully regulation, it wouldn't have mattered. So.
That was going to the Ferris wheel at the CNE. Now, and it always brings us back to a classic Simpsons reference, and you know how you and I feel about our Simpsons references.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What's the reference?
Oh, the the Homer. Sorry, I had a sip of my beer. Homer's on the couch. He doesn't want to go to church, and he's watching the CFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this moment where the sportscaster's like, "Hey, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, who led the league with 7 rouges, or only scored so many rouges last year." Have you never seen that clip?
I've seen it. I was waiting for you to tell it because it was clear that you wanted to tell the story. So.
Oh, I just assumed that all 7 of our listeners had seen it. So yeah. I was just going to.
Always everyone's first podcast sometimes, right? Or people maybe don't remember exactly what happened in that clip, right?
No, that's fair. That's fair. And I'm sure I would play it now if we cared about editing or tweeting it out or anything like that. So maybe that's why we're still at 7 listeners.
Maybe. There's a chance that number maybe will go up this week because Labor Day is on the horizon,
yes!
As we talked about. And the Riders, of course, will play the Bombers this week in Regina. They will play next week in Winnipeg, and then that will be the season series. It's going to be an interesting 2 weeks.
Yes,
in the CFL,
so.
And really across the West, because obviously the Riders and Bombers play back-to-back weeks, and the Stamps and the Elks play back-to-back weeks. BC plays Ottawa this week. So... we may finally start to see sort of the direction we may see for the West down the stretch run here a little bit. If certain things break away. Now, if everyone splits, then we're just kind of exactly where we were before.
Which is what I'm rooting for, because I love chaos.
No, absolutely. From an outsider's perspective, from a guy who covers this league perspective, I hope both Western series split and we're in the exact same spot and we just get on one hell of a roller coaster down the stretch for the final half of the year. But I do think, number one, I think Edmonton has a very good chance to win both games against Calgary, because I think that's a team going in the wrong direction.
Agreed.
Two, I do think there is, while I wouldn't bet a lot of money on it, because it doesn't technically happen a whole lot, at least not recently. The Riders have only won twice in Winnipeg since 2014. Like, they won in 2014, they've won once in 2018 since.
Yes.
So it's certainly not the favored scenario. It's certainly not the most likely scenario. But I do believe, despite the way both teams are kind of trending right now, that there is an outside chance that the Riders could take both of these games. And so I don't think we need to have any explanation as to why we think they may win Labor Day Classic, because we've seen the Riders be complete dog shit and just beat the shit out of good Bomber teams during that game, because that's just how that goes more often than not.
No, that's just that is exactly, and I'm just used to it, and I have accepted it, and that's the way it will always be.
Now, that doesn't mean Winnipeg can't win. We've seen them win occasionally, and especially more so in recent years. It's getting a little closer to 50-50 than it was for a while.
Yes.
But I think overall, because in going into the Banjo Bowl, this will be far more vital for the Riders, perhaps, is I think, unlike the BC Lions, who we think have proven are not capable and are not built well to beat the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
No.
I believe the Saskatchewan Rough Riders are at least better equipped to do so. Now, I know they didn't quite get full bully ball Bombers the last time they were here a few weeks ago. And they're getting up to that level again with the offensive line, even though they're on like their 12th offensive lineman. So they're running the ball. They're doing all that thing, all that stuff they do right. But I think Corey Mace has built a team that has built the fight back against that. They are obviously excellent against the run minus one game against Edmonton. And as we saw against that game against Winnipeg, though we haven't seen as much recently, but I feel like playing Winnipeg will probably bring it back out again. This team has the capability of being violent back, which is what you have to do against a team that is as strong and as plays bully ball like the Bombers. So I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying for the first time in a while, I believe the Riders could potentially win both games.
Well, and you and I were talking about how this, especially in the CFL West this year, it's seeming like you've got teams that are built to beat other teams, right? Winnipeg matches up really well against BC. Mm-hmm. I think Saskatchewan matches up really, really well against Winnipeg. And let's face it, Saskatchewan was one of the first teams to go, okay, this is how you beat Winnipeg. You put in Kolaris' hands. Now, Kolaris is going to have more options at receiver this game and has looked more like himself minus
until
last week. Oh, God, that was terrible. Like, if Kolaris plays anything like he did last week, it's a sweep and it's an ugly sweep. Right. But even at that, you needed Sergio Castillo heroics to beat the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Like, I feel like the chance is there. I love that we are all just kind of assuming that Saskatchewan's going to win Labor Day, even though they were only a 2.5-point favorite. But I as a Bomber fan, although I am in my 5-year grace period, so I can't be that upset. I do feel like, and they showed it earlier this year, that Saskatchewan is just, they are just, much like Winnipeg is BC's kryptonite, I feel like Saskatchewan is Winnipeg's kryptonite, and it could be a long 2 weeks for a Bomber fan that proudly wears his gear everywhere he goes in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, I think at the very least, I mean, I don't think Winnipeg, even if when they play at their best, has the offense to like blow the doors off the Riders like we've seen in the Banjo Bowl for the last number of years, a number of times. Like, there's been a few 40 and 50 burgers on there the last few years.
There's been some big ones, yeah.
Yeah, I don't... There would have to be... The defense would probably have to score at least 2 or 3 times for that to happen. So I think it'll be close, which will give the Riders a chance to win. Now, I mean, Winnipeg is certainly improving. They are a far better team than they were last time these two teams played. But... Yeah, I'm not ready to rule it out. And if the Riders can win both, I think they'll be sitting pretty because, I mean, BC, even if they kind of get their offense going a bit, that defense is terrible.
Yeah, they are.
They've obviously already locked, not that the season series matters anymore because they have the tie in their repertoire, but they'll be enough up on the Bombers that there's some good space there. Edmonton's kind of okay. Like, they have the offense to operate and do some things sometimes, but their defense is still kind of mess, so they're beatable. Calgary, as you said, I think is going backwards. So as long as things break around them the right way, this could change in a hurry. And it could also stay exactly the same as everything flips, or it could flip completely the other way. And that's completely, like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Winnipeg wins both of these games. And if Trey Ford doesn't play, I could maybe see maybe Calgary at least splitting, maybe winning both, but probably not.
I love how ridiculous the season. Like, it is literally this season is quite literally Montreal, probably Ottawa,
definitely,
and
Ottawa,
then and then everybody else except Hamilton.
Yeah, right now Toronto's the clear three, I think, but
yeah,
that can certainly change in an instant around here the way things are going.
But even just like quickly glancing at like points for, points against, which I've always thought is a pretty good indicator, yep, of who's good and who's bad. Toronto isn't really excelling in either way. I mean, they're kind of average. Meanwhile, you've got like Edmonton's over 300 points this year, but have given up 300 points. Hamilton has given up 360 points in 11 games. Woof.
Yeah.
That's real bad. So I love, like, my favorite seasons are when everything is just chaos. And it's just, it's funny seeing now, and I know it's all being said tongue in cheek, now that the East is better than the West, that everybody's going, oh, yeah, better go ahead and unify those standings now, because the East is so much better than the West in this year. So,
I mean, had they done that, it would have been true. Like, I have no problem with that. The only thing I'm really upset about is that Hamilton can't get their shit together enough to cross over finally.
wouldn't that have been sweet? But I'm like, listen, and this comes from my experience with the NLL, that 100% the unified standings were awesome. Every game meant a little bit more, right? I get it. You don't have a long season in the CFL, just like you don't have a long season in pro lacrosse, but every game meant more because it wasn't like, we lost to, you know, I mean, Saskatchewan's losses aren't anywhere near as bad because they were against the last two in the tie, were against Eastern Division teams, hence why they're still first place in the West. So I would love to see unified standings. I'm, abandoned tradition except unified standings as much as I love the Rouge. So I'd like to see it go that way. But until now, till then, chaos reigns, and I, for one, am here for it. Yes. Yes.